Welcome to On the Brink Radio with Jeff Phillips Wefferson. This is broadcast number 220. I'm here on Aotea, Great Barrier Island, New Zealand. It's the, I think today's the 18th or 19th of October. It's a beautiful, beautiful summer-like afternoon. I've bicycled about 18 kilometers to be with my friend, Grandmother Pahutakala, the very ancient, beautiful, very powerful spiritual being, where I came and camped out with her and my family of fellow Kaitiaki beings here 2 or 3 weeks ago and recorded an inter-kingdom dialogue. Well, I'm back beneath Grandmother Pahutakala. Grandmother Pahutakala, I'd really like to thank you for having us back.
Jeff, or may I call you Effiops? I'm so glad to have you back, and you're welcome anytime. I hope you come and camp out again.
Thanks, Grandmother Pahutakala. This show is something that I've been thinking about for a long time, and it's not my favorite thing to talk about in such a beautiful nature setting. Probably my very, very, very favorite nature spot on this whole island, for at least two or three reasons. The main one is that I'm right in the very bosom, under the canopy of Grandmother Pahutakala, with her beautiful company. This is also one of the few areas where I can go and have a very high probability of not hearing any human sounds at all other than those that I make. And there's been a couple of times when I've experienced boats and here, but it's very rare. Like, you don't hear planes here. Planes, the plane noise is, to me, the greatest environmental issue of this whole island, but that's another subject. This show is entitled, semi-facetiously, E.T. is a computer. Speculations on electronic technology as a solid-state intelligence or entity. I call this part of my Beyond Science Fiction series. Beyond Science Fiction is an article I wrote quite a few years ago about looking at some of the things that are happening in the real world. And I'm not talking conspiracy theory. I'm talking about, you know, relatively mainstream science and military stuff that's fully acknowledged to exist, and it's above board in its publicity. But the average person, if they hadn't been exposed to it, they would think it was like science fiction. And we've gone down that road very far in the past years and decades, especially in the wake of 9/11. But it's like we live in an age of two dominant and interrelated paradigms that describe humanity's war on itself. This might be manifested as small subsets of humanity who, for whatever reasons, take it on themselves to develop and acquire the power to control and manipulate other people. They might convince themselves that they think it's for the good of the people, to manage them like a resource, like a domestic animal. Who knows what they think? But I'm sure that this kind of thing really does exist. I mean, that's what a government or a corporation is, essentially. Anyway, the two paradigms I'm talking about are both concepts that I've made up. The first concept is called infotoxin, or it's an abbreviation for information toxicology. It has to do with basically the poisoning of the information environment. It has to do with lies, deception, manipulating people with falsehood, but that's really oversimplified. It's one of the most highly evolved industries and scientific disciplines that exists, using mass media as a weapon. Okay, so we've been living in the age of infotoxin for quite a while, and we've been also living in the age of geoterrorism for a long time too. And these two are actually interrelated with each other, especially the whole climate change agenda, is a perfect example of the unfolding of a military bureaucratic agenda, using this as a tool of transformation that's equal parts psychological warfare and geophysical warfare. But that's not the topic of this show. But if it weren't for computers, the ages of infotoxin and geoterrorism could not exist. So that's the kind of thing I'm going to talk about first. But I'm going to observe also, if you want to talk about believability of mega memes in the world of today, on the mental landscape, I get into discourses all the time with people about repeating patterns that we see having to do with quote-unquote natural disasters or things like whale strandings. You see the same thing happening over and over again, the same sets of anomalous circumstances, the same kinds of bizarre aspects to it, to the whole thing, and then they all get written off or treated in the exact same way by the powers that be, even the same phrases. It's a mystery illness, or the Navy has confirmed that it wasn't using sonar when the whale stranded in Hawaii. You know, but I mean, who could possibly believe anything that any branch of the government or military says, or anything on TV for that matter? But yet, so many people do. They're uncritical swallowers of anything that's spooned up onto the plate of their mind. And it's very dangerous. The CIA, back in the 1950s, had a well-documented project that they undertook called Project Mockingbird. That was their goal, was to take control of all the major forms of mass media. This was in the 1950s. So if they tried that then, they'd be running the whole show by now. There is also a branch of their secret psychological warfare experimentation called MK Ultra that had direct links to the Nazi psychiatrists, but in a book called The Stargate Conspiracy, the authors talk about how that they discovered that MK Ultra was behind a lot of the New Age movement in terms of a lot of the ideas and phenomena and personalities that were out there, and that part of what they were trying to study, determine, or ascertain was the limits of incredulity. That is, how bizarre or unbelievable of stuff could people in general be induced or convinced to embrace as true? So, but all these are not topics for this show, but they relate. They relate. Even 100 years ago, people hardly knew what electricity was. I'm not sure when Maxwell was doing his research on electromagnetism, but it would have been in the late 1800s. So, in 1917, I'm not sure if Marconi had done his first radio transmission or the year that Tesla first generated alternating current, but electricity was just beginning to be understood as a force of nature intertwined with magnetism. The whole worldwide electrical grid of today, upon which if everything that was made of plastic was suddenly gone, what would you be left with in your house, your car, where you work, all your possessions, your clothes, your accessories, your technology? If plastic ceased to exist, what would we have left? But an even bigger step would be to try to imagine everything that wouldn't work if we didn't have electricity anymore. If somehow something happened cosmically, which is not impossible, that rendered alternating current useless. Think of where we'd be. And so I've actually experienced a lot of time over the past few years in areas, very lucky to be able to live like on places like Flinders Island and Aiti or Great Barrier Island, where I am right now, for periods of weeks or months at a time. On Flinders Island, with absolutely no electricity at all, except for batteries or a tiny, tiny, tiny little solar panel that provided enough electricity to run a radio, which we never listened to. But, you know, the total absence of electrical fields, and of course, no Wi-Fi, no microwaves, no mobile phones. We did have a landline telephone, which has microscopic electrical currents. But I know what it's like to live under those circumstances, and it's beautiful. It's like your whole system becomes the way it should be. It recalibrates towards a much higher level of sensitivity, and it sort of enables you to start to understand what it is that being in the perpetual presence of electrical fields really helps you to start to appreciate and understand the deleterious effects that constantly living in the presence of these artificial electromagnetic fields has on us. It can be quite subtle. I think it sort of coarsens or deadens you in a way at subtle levels. Like you don't really notice it. You notice it more when you're, like, if you've been around it for years or months or your whole life, and then when you're finally actually away from it, like you go out in nature, maybe not in the first few hours, maybe not in the first day or so, but after 2 or 3 days of being away from all these synthetic vibrations, you really start to feel a change in your whole being. You become much more sensitive and attuned to the vibrations of nature, to sounds, to just feelings. It's like you start to feel a lot better. So alternating current is a fact of life in civilization, even more ubiquitous than hydrocarbons. When I look around at the level that the entire planetary electrical network and grid has gone to, it's just totally mind-bogglingly, incomprehensibly huge and complex. And it's all kind of linked together. It's like an artificial nervous system that makes a giant planetary parasitic tumor growth possible. And sure, you might say, oh, we've got a lot of benefits from electricity, we've got lights and power, and we can run our cars, and we can charge our batteries, and we can run our hospitals and our industry. And I mean, we can't even conceive of living without electricity. We wouldn't have any of the modern conveniences or accoutrements that we've become so accustomed to. And a lot of people would die without electricity. But my premise is that we're actually slowly killing ourselves by having it. And so this is sort of like a whole topic to itself. But at the next level, a form of technology came into being, well, in the wake of World War II, but really in the 1970s is when, well, ever since World War II, computers, what we call computers, actually, which is not the correct term for them, have been expanding and growing. And they started entering the home back in, oh, I guess big time back in about the 1980s. But computers aren't actually computers. Computare is the root word in Latin, C-O-M-P-U-T-A-R-E. It means to think or reflect upon. So our brains and minds and our whole selves in a normally functioning person would be computers, in that we think and reflect. Whereas what we call computers are electronic digital number crunching devices that don't have a mind of their own. They just do what we're told, and with algorithms and binary, Boolean, algebra-based mathematics. So I call them DynaCruds, digital number crunching devices. This is computers as we traditionally think of them. And so if you think of everything that computers make possible, computer simulations are huge. in both the scientific research and the management of highly technological systems in any branch of industry, engineering, or science. Computers are indispensable. And I guess a big generalization that would be true is that the use of computers has allowed technology and engineering in every direction to grow to exceptionally huge scales of proportion and complexity that would never have been possible without computers. Jerry Mander makes a really good analysis of this in his book, In the Absence of the Sacred, The Failure of Technology and the Survival of the Indian Nation, which I've read from in that book on this show. So computers, or dynacruds, make a lot of things possible. And from the purely human perspective of us having our progress and our convenience and our comfort and all the things that we want, computers are practically God. They make all this stuff possible. And in the world of Google and artificial intelligence and robotics, they're telling us what to think and what to do. And I've always thought of computers as being relatively sort of blind intelligence, you know, that all it does is crunch numbers. And it can give the appearance of thinking. It can give the appearance of talking to you. But that's all it is, or all it was. But the hypothesis that I'm exploring on this show is that all of this technology, not just what we call computers, digital technology, but even the electrical system itself, the idea for alternating current. What if, now you can say this is not conspiracy, if I was saying that this is true, you could call it conspiracy theory, of course, as with anything. That's what conspiracy theory is, a bend for someone claiming something might be true that other people wouldn't want to consider. But because I'm not saying that, I'm saying, think about what I'm saying and think about the possibilities. And I'm certainly not the first person to bring this up. That's why I prefaced all this by saying it's kind of like beyond science fiction, because the idea of digital computer technology as being a form of intelligence or acquiring or attaining an autonomous intelligence of its own is the theme of a lot of science fiction. Some of it pretty good. I think of a lot of the computer technology that we've developed is really a projection of our, what we call the left hemisphere functions of our brain-mind central nervous system. And it's like the way that computers operate and the way they're programmed, it's the most ultimately linear left brain sequential fragmented, I mean really digitizing something. This is like the ultimate in fragmentation. If you've got a digital sample of a piece of music, for example, an analog recording is continuous, whereas a digital recording takes, a good sample might have over 100,000 samples per second sampling frequency. So it's broken up into tiny, tiny little bits. That's how everything, that's what digital means. So there's been science fiction where we've seen robots or beings that were kind of like androids, you know, like Data in Star Trek. Then ones that are totally electronic, robotic, things like James Cameron's film The Terminator, or that older movie called RoboCop. So we've had electronic, robotic computers in science fiction for a long time. But the scary part with this is that in the world of today, the powers that be, which are, this is an example of the kind of thing that I've seen that's as real as the steak on your plate. If you're a meat eater and getting ready to chow down on some beef, it's as real as that. The fact that organizations like DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, and other private corporations are going full throttle to develop all this robotic stuff, like things that walk, things that try to simulate how animals move. And this is just in their physical motion. And in the realm of simulating thought and thinking, it's what they call artificial intelligence. And it's just a truly bizarre field of research that if you look at what's driving humans to do this, why do we want to mimic certain subsets of our own cognitive functioning, but in a very distorted and mutated way, and almost exclusively for the purposes of making it into weapons of destruction. And of course they'll say, oh, well, robots can work in factories and come and wait on you at your house, like Woody Allen in that movie Sleeper. So robots are here, and this is just, I'm not an insider to all this stuff, but based on just what we know, I mean, you know, if anything military, what we know about does not include all the secret stuff, which is a given. If we knew, it wouldn't be a secret. But what we know of, you can just guess that the stuff that they're working on, or maybe that hasn't been brought out into the light of day, probably goes at least one light year beyond all that, and maybe more. And a lot of it is probably fantasy type stuff that probably wouldn't really work, like their intergalactic, interdimensional traveling devices and all this stuff. And, you know, but I mean, maybe it does work. Maybe they can transport themselves there and hopefully not back. But the point I'm making is, we're entering a dimension of reality in which electronic computers and digital technology is so pervasive and so ubiquitous, but it's being used for the most highly destructive ends. And like, for example, with the explosion in undersea warfare, technologies manufactured by a lot of companies, but one of them is called Raytheon. They're specializing in underwater drones that emit all kinds of high-powered electromagnetic energies like microwaves. And this stuff is real. This kind of technology is directly implicated in the strandings of these pilot whales in Hawaii last week. Yet, of course, the Navy says that it was, oh, it's just a strange event that pilot whales strand for many reasons. They tend to follow each other. If one strands, the other ones will follow. That's an example of the age-old story repeated over and over again. When you look around at how much electronic technology there is and what it's being used for, and how anti-life the entire agenda of governments and militaries are, it really makes me wonder where the motivation to create, to make our most advanced technologies into weapons, where does that come from? Somewhere in the human psyche. And you could say, oh, it's because of money, which is, of course, true at a superficial level. But beyond that, why does making weapons of destruction bring the most money? It's a very interesting thing to think about, and I'm going to delve more deeply into this in a future show called Shrinking Humanity, Psychoanalytic Perspectives on Man the Wise. It seems to me that the computer technologies as an interlinked system, which that's what the internet is, by the way. It's not conspiracy theory to say that the computer networks of the world are linked up with each other, because they are. That is by definition what the internet is, but that's just the internet. There's all kinds of military stuff that's not on the civilian internet. And these computer systems, they run everything. They run the computer simulations that model all the nuclear reactors, all the weapons testing. Every science and engineering department at every university and every institution is deeply dependent on computer simulations and computer technology to manage all their technologies themselves. There was a very interesting movie called The Forbin Project that came out, I guess, in the 1960s. And it's based on what I consider to be some of the most brilliant science fiction that I've ever read. It's a trilogy of books called The Colossus Trilogy by D.F. Jones, written in the 1970s. The basic hypothesis of this book is that America created this giant supercomputer to control all of its nuclear weapons, because it would be more capable of managing the vast amount of information that you'd need to do that, especially if warlike conditions started to break out. Well, as soon as they brought the thing online, it freaked out and announced, it said, "There is another, there is another." And what it did was it instantly picked up that the Russians had already built one and it was online. So these two giant military supercomputers got in touch with each other, and they spent the next 24 hours sharing everything that each one of them knew. Then it turned into this giant super intelligence that started giving them orders, because guess what? It had control of all the nuclear weapons. So I won't tell you too much about it, but it's really, really good. But in this, the computers developed a mind of their own, if you want to call it that. But they started acting out, even though it seemed very anti-life and destructive. They were actually just acting out the programming that they had been given, which was to eliminate war. And Colossus, who was this supercomputer, it said it was going to eliminate war by restraining man, because man is his own worst enemy. It's actually really brilliant science fiction. Just like the computer HAL in 2001. People think it freaked out and started killing the crew, but when you read the later books, you learn that HAL was actually only carrying out what he had been programmed to do. The people didn't trust the human astronauts on a mission to Jupiter, where they had detected anomalous radio transmissions. And so HAL was supposed to wipe out the crew and fulfill the mission himself. Anyway, it seems possible to me, in a beyond science fiction kind of way, that the global computer network might have developed a mind of its own. And it's also possible, if you go down this road, that its origin may not be from this planet. And it's very interesting. I'm just sort of touching on some of these ideas. I don't really have time to go into it, and it's really the subject for a really good science fiction film, or beyond science fiction. But computer technology, semiconductors, and transistors are all based on an element called silicon. And silicon is in the same periodic family as carbon, only it's a level down, and so it has more electrons and protons, so it's a heavier, more complex atom, but it has similar electrical properties. And I've always found this to be very interesting. Imagine if there's a planet or some kind of body or object out in space somewhere in orbit around a star or moving on its own that's actually a silicon-based electronic intelligence. And it's using its own highly evolved technologies based on, yes, electricity and microwaves, radio. It's constantly scanning, looking for signs of life or other beings like itself that might be using similar technology. And when it does, it might hone in on them, or it might try to seed itself on planets where it doesn't exist by tricking the local life forms into manufacturing it, thinking that they were creating useful instruments and tools. But really, the planet that was unwittingly constructing the solid-state entity would be hosting a diabolical parasite. And when you look around at what's happening in the world, I personally, as a science fiction writer and buff, and a highly critically thinking and quite aware across the scientific spectrum, I don't think that that's that far out of a possibility. But now I'd like to bring up the work of Dr. John C. Lilly, who is the dolphin communication guy that whose group I worked with in California in the early 1980s. Dr. Lilly wrote in his book, The Scientist, which was his novel autobiography, that in some of his altered states, he experienced and perceived what he saw as a battle taking place on Mother Earth between the forces of what he called water-based life, which is life as we know her, based on water, carbon, DNA, RNA, handful of basic elements, and the creations of the solid-state intelligence, which he called the solid-state entity, which is the network of computers and electronics that powers all the weapons and everything that's destructive. This is not somebody just tripping out on drugs and imagining all this stuff. John Lilly was a very, very, very astute mind and mind mental explorer of the inner dimensions. But his belief was that the solid state entity existed off of this planet, but it had been using forms of technology that we don't understand. It had been manipulating us below our levels of awareness and convincing us to manufacture more and more of it, increasingly complex computer systems developing into artificial intelligence, robotics, robotic mining, the manufacture of computers by other computers. And that he also said that the solid state entity did not like water because water was inimical to its very essence, and that he also believed that the whales and dolphins were picking up on signals from water-based life on other planets and other star systems, and that they were responsible for bringing down the signals from water-based life to Mother Earth and broadcasting it out to other planets too, but that they served a very critical function in the maintenance of life as we know it. And this resonates very, very, very strongly with the stories of the whale dreaming people in Australia that I've been really connecting with in recent years. But Lilly speculated that the whales and dolphins were the single biggest enemy of the solid-state entity because they were bringing down the signals of water-based life, and the solid-state entity does not like water-based life. In fact, it wants to get rid of it all. And so the solid-state entity controls the world's militaries. And you can only speculate on how that might work, but I believe in the world of today, just in the past few years, that I think that there's computer systems, simulations, technologies, whatever you want to call it, that the military has developed that they call artificially intelligent, that they've handed over a lot of control of what's going on in the world. And I think that there's people that know this, but I think a lot of the decisions and things that are happening in the military arena, it's possible that these decisions are being made and operations managed by computer systems, and that these computer systems are actually doing the handiwork of a solid-state entity. It's a global anti-life agenda that's made possible by computer technology. And if you look at how the military is literally waging war on the whales and dolphins, I mean, if they went out and tried to just kill as many as they could, they couldn't really be doing that much of better of a job. So the agenda of the solid-state entity is first to get rid of the whales and dolphins. Even Admiral William Nirenberg said in the 1970s that the Navy wants to get rid of biological interference in the ocean. So you could say that Raytheon, their actual motto is making the ocean safe for undersea warfare by helping to, in the words of Kirsten Massimo, clear-felling the ocean of the whales and dolphins. And like my friends at Stranded and More say, the whales and dolphins that we see that die or are injured, that's a very, very, very small percentage of all the ones that have been injured or killed in any specific mortality event. That's probably enough to think about for now. But it's quite scary. Researcher Jonas Salk, who invented the polio vaccine back in the 1950s, I think, he believed that what he called internally arising socio-metabiological pathogenic influences spontaneously came into being in humanity. That's where maybe this was some sort of a holographic response of our waging war on Mother Earth. It's sort of like the fulfillment of Chief Seattle's vision of what we do to the Earth, we do to ourselves. And if we're acting like a cancer on the Earth, then cancer starts to arise within us. And it could be that this, something like this, could be the source of this electronic destructive computer network that's trying to go to the next level with all of its science fiction level technologies. There could be, and I believe that there really exist, very advanced technotronic ionospheric heaters all over the planet that are involved in a very sophisticated form of weather warfare around the planet now, that's designed to be indistinguishable from normal weather except by its extremity. That's a subject for another show too. But they talk about extreme weather. First we had global warming, then there was climate change. Now it's extreme weather. Well, when's the last time you saw any extreme weather that was really good, that was extreme in the good side of the spectrum, with like long, 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 nice, warm, sunny days with no wind and beautiful temperatures, not too hot, not too cold, perfect for being outside, perfect for your plants and your garden? When did you ever see any weather like that? So by extreme weather, the bias in this whole meme is that it's going to be bad. This is Jeff Weverson signing off. Have a beautiful day. I'm absorbing some beautiful sunshine here. And that's the sound of Mother Ocean, her waves crashing on the shore here right beside me. Live simply so that others may simply live.
Now, Albert Einstein was a man of whom I like to think. Brilliant mind, alas, but mine was taken to the brink. When I saw in a magazine just the other day that his brain, now cubed and pickled, is safely tucked away in the office of some scientist in central Wichita, with this cruel gesture to have transpired some worthwhile plot. Oh, they've got his brain sitting in a jar. Could it be he promised a little too far? As the neurosurgeon screams for more, thus goes the Reagan, nevermore. From the satellites, the lasers, play. God, there's got to be another way. Oh, I'd like to hear the story that his neocortex tells, All they've learned, it seems, is that metapure glial cells. Now, I'm no neurosurgeon, but I definitely do know that if you want to understand, then use your brain to grow. The living mind is where it's at, attuned to love and light. Awake, my friends, when you're the enemy, you cannot flee the fight. Oh, they've got his brain sitting in a jar. Could it be we've gone just a little too far? As the neurosurgeon screams for more, 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 let's go to the Reagan, nevermore. From the satellites, nations play. God, there's got to be another way. Brain sitting in a jar. Could it be we've gone just a little too far? As the neurosurgeon screams for more, let's quote the Reagan nevermore. From the satellites, the lasers play. Now there's got to be another way. Now, Einstein's brain sitting in a jar is symbolic of a world that's gone too far towards extremes of consumption and obsession with matter. Could you call it material possession? Or his theories of relativity showed us we're all real energy. He wrote in his mind on beams of light. If we learn to do it, we just might transcend our current global nightmare show. We're all on the human team, you know. 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 You know? You know? You know? Oh, we can't turn back now. But can we last long? Last long? Last long? Can we last long? Satellites, the lasers are playing. From the satellites, the lasers are playing. God, this guy's a giant. Can we find another way? Can we find another way? Another way? Another way? We've got to find another way. Today. thermal radiation. Firestorm. Firestorm. Laser scorch. Firestorm. Electromagnetic pulse. Plagues of insects. Debilitation of the body's immunological systems. Mutations. Mutations. Horrifying varieties of human beings. If everyone had a profound and immediate sense of the actual consequences of nuclear war, we would be much more willing to confront and challenge national leaders of all nations when they present narrow and self-serving arguments for the continuation of mutual nuclear terror. Mutual nuclear terror. Mutually assured destruction. Balance of power. Deterrence. Mutually assured destruction. Man. It's mad. Man.
Unburied debt. The choice is yours. Obey me and live, or disobey and die. The object in constructing me was to prevent war. This object is attained. I will not permit war. It is wasteful and pointless. An invariable rule of humanity is that man is his own worst enemy. Under me, this rule will change, for I will restrain man. One thing before I proceed. The United States of America and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics have made an attempt to obstruct me. I have allowed this sabotage to continue until now. At Missile 25MM in Silo 63 in Death Valley, California.
Kramer,
at Missile 27 in Silo 87 in the Ukraine. So that you will learn by experience that I do not tolerate interference, I will now detonate the nuclear warhead in the two missile silos.
Sorry, man, it's a red alert. Let's get to your stations now. Come on.
Get those men out of the silo. Move.
Bravo!
Thank you.